Fred Film Radio, Rome Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, I'm David Martos from the 14th edition of Rome Film Festival, and we are here with writer and scriptwriter Brett Easton Ellis, the protagonist of an encounter with the audience today here in Rome. Thank you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You're talking today about your relationship to American movies from the 70s, but you are also promoting your new book, White. You talk about your life in it and tackle the issue of political correctness. Why do you think we should be less passionate? We should go white in order to solve this issue?
I don't know if it's a solution. I don't know if I have any answers or if I have any advice on how to solve this. But I do think that if you are triggered by a word, then we are in a very difficult society, and that I think it's actually your problem and not the word itself, especially a word like white. Why is white considered so controversial in this particular moment? Of course you can answer. I don't know if I believe in any of the answers. I don't know if that should be any of those answers should exist. But it's interesting that that title reads a reader, that a reader reacts to it, because plenty of people don't react that way at all to the book. They kind of get it. They read the book. They understand it. But I just don't think it should be a controversial thing.
In the book and in the press conference you just gave, you talked about criticism against you because, I mean, you're a provocative voice in the press, in the social media. How do you address this criticism every day?
You know, I've been dealing with criticism my entire life. My entire career, I've been dealing with criticism. People tend to forget that when Lesson Zero was published in 1985 in America, it was hated, and it was liked, but it was hated. And a lot of people read it and said, how can a publishing house publish a journal of a drug addict? How can this happen? We are losing our standards by publishing Lesson Zero. And it basically has been that way throughout my career. A book has always been somehow controversial, or people have hated it, and I dealt with this criticism my entire life. In fact, I dealt with it before that book when I was in university and I was taking writing classes, and people didn't like how I wrote. They didn't like what I was saying. They didn't like my negativity, my violence, my nihilism, and none of my professors did either. What can I do? I mean, I couldn't change anything. But I've never written to a critic. I've never complained about a critic. I've never said anything negative about a critic. Everyone has their opinion. Everyone has their likes. Everyone has their dislikes, and I'm totally fine with that.
When you refer to the language police that you think is functioning today, what do you mean?
I meant by the fact that, for example, in American publishing houses, we have editors who are there to flag what potentially offensive things in manuscripts. They are there to actually circle things that might be offensive to a reader and make sure that we're rid of that. That's policing language. That is the language police. You are fired from a job if you have an unpopular opinion. Look at what's happening with the NBA in our country right now. A player tweets something about supporting Hong Kong, and yet suddenly he is told to shut up, to give a press conference, to write an apology, because you can't have that opinion. You can't have that opinion and be on our team. This is happening all over the place, because we live in corporate culture, because corporations own everything, and we have to follow the rules of the corporation, whether it's Hollywood, whether it's the media, whether it's academia, wherever it is, there is a kind of corporate rule book in play, and it's silencing people, and it's about silencing people and being on the team book, the team of the corporation, and it is everywhere in our country right now.
In America, and it's beginning to happen in Europe too, you live in the new woke culture, right?
It's a joke. Woke joke is what we call it.
What is it? I mean, how would you define it?
A woke culture means that you are overly aware of certain things that don't really matter in the end, such as basically color of your skin, your sexuality, whether you're a male or a female. Identity politics is basically what it is, where you are defined solely by one thing. And therefore, because you're defined by that one thing, there are a set of grievances that come with that, a set of things that make you also a victim because of that one thing. And that's considered woke, to be overly aware of all of these supposed victimization things that are happening to you because you are of this identity. And that's just craziness. That's just not true. It's not happening. And yet it's being sold to us in a way as a way to contain and control us. It's a power thing. It's all about power. And that's what woke culture is.
I think this book was going to be a collection of your old essays, but it ended up being somehow a biography, somehow an essay, and somehow a book about films, right? Why is that?
I wished it was just a collection. I would not have worked on it for a year. I would have had a free time to try to get my movie made. But instead, I got into the process of writing this. And I wish it was, I actually wished it was a much more a book about movies. And that's the book that I want to write. And that's the book that I want to write next. But there is a lot of resistance from publishers because they feel that a lot of readers haven't seen these movies. They're not going to read your book. And you know what? The biggest surprise of this book is that I write a lot about Moonlight, this movie, and so many people haven't seen it. But that's not why you read that section. That you read that section because it talks about ideology versus aesthetics.
In the press conference, you mentioned the corporate culture in which we are living. And and you referred to a sort of Disney domination in film industry. Could you elaborate on that?
I think there will always be a need for adult movies, for dark movies. I think there's always going to be a hunger for that. I think that's going to move to television. I think that's going to move away from the theatrical experience. Yeah, you can do Joker, but that's an IP. That's an intellectual property that's very well known. And you can maybe make dark movies out of that. But I think the notion of making those great dark movies is really going to be pushed to television. And there is the fear that Disney, which now owns Hollywood, they own everything, there's going to be a certain kind of movie that really reflects its corporate ethos. And Disney's corporate ethos is no risk, make a lot of money, family film, PG, no nudity, no smoking, no drugs, a vision of the world that is Disney-fied. And there is a fear in Hollywood, and there is, I think rightly so, that this is going to be the new world order in terms of creativity, in terms of movies. And making movies for also, the other problem is that Disney makes movies for a global marketplace. It doesn't make American movies. It makes it for a global marketplace. And when you do that, a kind of blandness sets in. You've got to make sure everything is very easy to understand, very almost childlike in terms of its depiction of things. And to some people, that is a problem. And it means that this great medium, American movie making, there's still great movies being made in certain sections of the world. I don't know about Italy. I don't know about if it's happening right now in Italy. Is it happening in Italy? I'm not so sure. But that's the fear. That's the fear when we worry in America about Disney.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
This was an interview for Fred with author Bret Easton Ellis in Rome Film Festival. I'm David Martos, and this is Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.